This is Stephanie Fisher with the Youngstown State University Oral History Department. I'm interviewing Sister Consolata Klein. The project is the history of the Youngstown Diocese.
I'm Sister Consolata Klein. I'm a Sister of the Humility of Mary. Our mother house is in Villa Marie, Pennsylvania, right over the Pennsylvania border from Youngstown. I entered the community in January of 1943. And that was the same year that the Youngstown Diocese was formed. I'm from the Cleveland area, and formerly this diocese was part of the Cleveland Diocese. And the first bishop was Bishop McFadden, and he was a bishop from Cleveland Diocese. I remember him. I worked in the downtown area of Cleveland and would see him as he would go to his office, which was in a building close to where the office where I worked. And I didn't have much contact between 43 and 45 because I was in the novitiate, and that was located at Belle Marie, PA. My first assignment was at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Youngstown, and that was in 1945, which was very early after the diocese was formed. And in those early years, my contact with diocesan structure was rather minimal, although I had occasion to meet in Bishop McFadden. And I knew of his some of the things that were going on. For example, he was very interested in going around to the institutions. The hospital was one of them. And he also, as I heard about it, rather than had first-hand information, that he visited all the different places in the diocese. It's a six-county area. So that I felt that I knew a little bit about, because having known him prior to my entering the convent. And in thinking back, I tried to think of some of the things that went on during that period of time. And some of the things that came to my attention, just thinking about it when I first heard about this project, was the different areas in the diocese between 43 and 49 that he started, and among those were several parishes, and it was the growth of the just the natural growth that was taking place in the area, because this was following the war years when there had not been much growth. For example, St. James Parish was a large parish that was opened in Trumbull County. And I remember some others, and I looked up some of this material. There were Our Lady of Victory in Ashtabula County, St. James in Mahoney County, and Trumbull was Our Lady Perpetual Help, St. Mary's. I don't know which St. Mary's that was, in St. James, which I do remember because I had some contact with that. And Father Prokop, Monsignor Prokop, was Bishop McFadden's secretary. I'm not sure if he was chancellor, but he was very attentive to Bishop McFadden. And then in his last illness, Bishop McFadden spent considerable length of time at the St. Elizabeth's Hospital where I was working. And he was a very friendly type person and would tell us of his, you know, desires and ambitions for things that were going on. His tenure here was, I would say, rather limited, because it was just about a 5 or 6 year span. He was probably busy only about 5 years, because he was quite ill in his last illness. And we were glad that he was a patient at our institution. I remember more vividly Bishop Walsh. He came in 1949, and interestingly enough, when I was working before I entered the community in Cleveland, at an office in downtown Cleveland, I used to go over to the cathedral, which was St. John's Cathedral, which was quite close to our office. And on more than one occasion, I remember hearing Bishop Walsh, who came from the South on mission trips, seeking funds for the people in the South. And he was a very young, energetic priest. And it was interesting then in 49 when I heard that he was coming here as our bishop. And he lived at the hospital for 2 years after he came. And he was most interesting, a wonderful storyteller, and he had many interesting things. And he was an interesting person because he was very young when he was made a bishop, but he was also, as he called it, one of the horseback bishops. His diocese was quite rural, and many of the places he had to go, he went by horseback. And so we would just love to hear his stories of the South. And one interesting thing that stuck in my mind that he told us, because we were very interested in any of his tales, as we felt that he had such a breadth of knowledge, that when he would go to Rome for his visit with the Holy Father, probably his 5-year visit, the question the Holy Father would ask was, how do the different nationalities and the different races really get along in the United States? And you have to remember that that followed, possibly he was going over there at the time of World War II, and there was so much dissension and tension and all. And we always remarked among the sisters that he would be a very good representative of the United States because he had come from the South and had a true appreciation of the need to abolish some of the systems that were in existence in the South. And so he was very interested when he came north, as he talked about it, that there would be no vestige of discrimination. He, one of the first things I remember about him was that he was very interested in what had gone on prior to his coming, and would often ask us, you know, to tell him things about the diocese as we knew it. And most of us knew the Cleveland area better than we knew the Youngstown area because it was so very new. And he was also a person that liked to go around and find out all of the different things, why things were going on, because in the last 2 years of Bishop McFadden's tenure as bishop, he was quite ill. In fact, his last year he was very ill for a long time, and so I'm sure there must have been a tremendous number of things that people were just waiting to be able to talk to a bishop about, which was impossible when he was so ill. The other thing that Bishop Walsh is very interested in the growth of the Youngstown area and the total area, not just Youngstown City. And I took a look at the various parishes that were developed during his time, which was between 1949 and, I would say, about 1960. Bishop Malone became his auxiliary, I think it was around that time in 60, but there was a tremendous number of parishes that were started, the records will show. Every county had some. Ashtabula had three, Stark County had three that I just could pick out, Portage had two, Trumbull had four, and Mahoning County had about five. And that was a demonstration that the people had moved after in the 50s as they were moving out of the inner cities into various suburban areas in every area. And he was very much in tune. In fact, at the hospital, we had not had any opportunity to do anything about taking care of the expansion of the hospital. During the Depression, there wasn't any money. During the war times, there wasn't any support for any building because everything was going. And so that our census kept growing and growing, and still our facilities. So in 1949, we had been wanting to, I was not the administrator at that time, but the administrator had been wanting to do something about an expansion, and some of the people that were on our advisory board at that time kept saying, when are we going to do some expanding? And the first thing that we asked Bishop Walsh was that we would like to expand the hospital, and so invited him to come to an advisory board meeting. And rather than give an explanation, I remember distinctly his question was, well, why don't you do it? If that's a need, why don't you do it? And I think that was his approach, that he was people-oriented, that he felt if something was going to be done, that the people ought to take. And so parish-wise, he saw the need for expansion. Facility-wise, he saw the need for expansion. And I think he was very interested. Mooney High School was opened, and that was the expansion in that part of Youngstown during his tenure, his reign. And then he moved up on Fifth Avenue after living at the hospital. I think it was approximately 2 years. And he, very interesting person. For example, if we were walking along the hall with him in the hospital and we came to an elevator, and as you would for a person of his, you know, with all we felt was a dignitary, and asked him, you know, he would just sort of momentarily step aside, and he'd say, oh, no, sister, he said, I was a gentleman long before I was a bishop. But he was that type of person. He had a very keen sense of humor. And the things he would tell him, no, he would just had a hearty laugh. He's a very lovable and a very well-loved person. Unfortunately, his health did not hold up, and although he had, I would say, 10, 12 years of a very active, busy life. And then he became ill in his later years and was quite, and it was when Bishop Malone was made auxiliary, it wasn't too long after that that he was appointed, well, it was probably 5 years, as I remember, 6 years, that he was appointed the administrator, recognizing that Bishop Walsh's health did not permit him to carry the total burden, and even so that Bishop Malone was really as it was said in the literature, that he was the administrator of the diocese, and he was the had been ordained a bishop just about 6 years prior to that. Before that, he was in the school system. He was very active, and we were so proud of him because he was one of the first that went and got his PhD as a very young person and came back and did a tremendous, and I am not as familiar with the school system as I am, but what I would be familiar with is his great love for the children and his desire to have, even though the diocese was small, is to have an exemplary educational system. And I would say that's one of his shining lights, is that he's always seen education as a way out of the, if the children are educated and educated well, that they will have an opportunity in life. And I think he was a champion of that. An interesting thing in the diocese during was an unfortunate thing, but it was also interesting the way it was handled. I don't know what the cause was. The documentation will show that of the fire at the St. Columba Cathedral. And there's a striking picture that I hope they can locate that was taken at that time of Bishop Walsh coming out. It happened during the night, and he came out and was watching the cathedral go up in flames. And the picture shows his profile, and there are tears that stand out on his cheek watching that. So that was a picture that, if you see it, you will always remember. And I think it symbolized for him all of the, not only the devastation that any fire causes, but all of the people of that area, because St. Columba's was, even prior to its becoming a cathedral, was looked at as a mother church. It was in the city for many, many years. It had a tremendous history, and I just assumed that all of these things were in the forefront of his mind, that it meant a tremendous amount to the people to see something that they loved and valued go up in flames. I think, though, that the new cathedral, the present St. Columba's Cathedral, was built around that time. I'm not sure the dates, but I know it was built at the time that Bishop Walsh was bishop. And during the time that the cathedral was not able to be used, St. Patrick's Church on Oak Hill was used as the temporary cathedral. And there was some prominent people that normally would have been buried. Mr. Cushwa Sr. was one. I remember going there for his funeral, that he was buried from St. Patrick's because the cathedral wasn't able to be used. And he probably was originally from there anyway, but there were many instances. What seems singular to me when I remember seeing the new cathedral was the recognition by Bishop Walsh and the planners of the rich ethnic background of this whole area, because the whole backdrop of the mosaic behind the altar represents just about every nationality that made up this whole Youngstown diocese, because it was a rich ethnic. And I gave tremendous credit, even without saying it, but in my own mind, to someone like the Bishop Walsh, and if any part that Bishop Malone had in that, the recognition. There wasn't anyone stood out above the others. All had a part that the diocese was made up. And this was true in other parts of the diocese. And I think that is symbolic of, they've appreciated the diversity of the people that make up this area. And it's got a rich background. And I remember during the course of this time, Cardinal Mindszenty came here for a Labor Day mass and celebration, and he talked at the cathedral through an interpreter, and he happened to stay at the hospital while he was in the city. And my recollection is that he also appreciated the recognition that the diocese was made up of people from many nationalities, and they were suffering because after he went back, he was in house imprisonment, but he was a victim of the communists that did not want to recognize the rights of people. And so he gave the Labor Day talk, and that would be a record too, what he said, but my recollection of it is that he appreciated the people that would peacefully be able to work together regardless of their racial or ethnic background. So I think the diocese has exemplified that in many ways. The other recollection, tremendous things have been done under Bishop Malone, throughout the diocese. He's been not only very active in the education program, but when I was thinking about it, I thought the development of the social services, they really blossomed in the last, I would say, 20 years. And I think that's a real recognition of the, while the church is known for its teaching, it is also, I think he brought it to the forefront, the care of people who are in need. And I know in Catholic Charities, he has taken that as a personal task to make sure that every parish in the diocese recognizes that it has an obligation to support those who are in need in a variety of ways. And some of it's done through the agency, some of it's done through other ways, but he's a champion of that. And so it's not only education, but social services, and he's been extremely interested in our various healthcare concerns. He was always, I thought, for example, every Christmas, one of the bishops would come and offer the midnight mass, and it's just tremendous what they would do in recognizing. And they were both, I would say, both Bishop Malone and Bishop Francetta. They're well known in visiting people that are ill, and not only just the priests and religious, but if they hear of a family, or especially someone that has difficulty, I have experienced them coming. Sad time for us, and it flows out of the hospital. That I remember was when Bishop Malone himself was ill, and he was first hospitalized. He was diagnosed by Dr. Roppel, one of the family physicians, and he had to go to Roswell and for further surgery or further work. And the tremendous outpouring of concern and affection that people had. And he talked, when he came back after that harrowing experience, he went on TV and talked about his experience, that he appreciated what people had done, their prayers, their cards, their offers. But I think being upfront with it and not being have people wait and have them hear it from someone else. They actually saw him and heard him say that his health was improved. He was given a clean bill of health by his physician, and he was back to work at the, in his full on a full-time basis shortly after his recuperation. But that meant a tremendous amount to people that somebody of his stature didn't send someone else to say, well, you know, I feel better and I'll be back on the job shortly. But he stood in front of the total TV audience and gave his own message of hope. And I think that did a lot. And he, you know, during the war years, the I was not in Youngstown for that. I came, as my dates will show, after it, but there was a tremendous amount of work going on. And when the steel mills began to cut back, and we would have 5,000 and 6,000 people laid off at one day, it was Bishop Malone that took the reins and really got people, gave them a sense of hope, and which was cannot be explained adequately. And there again, I think it demonstrates that the way that he was exemplifying Christ's love for those that have any kind of unfortunate experience, whether it's losing the job, being ill, needing education, And that had a big impact on the diocese and the way people felt about that, because it was so devastating to feel that the mainstay of the work in this northeast part of Ohio was really just pulled out from under them. And he and the Episcopal bishop tried, you know, and I think the records will show that too, tried to almost in a sense rejuvenate the steel industry, which was not a possibility. But I don't think that not being able to be done is as significant as that it was tried, and that having tried it and demonstrated to the people, you know, this we will try, and if there's any possibility, that gave a real boost. And I don't think that has ever been done anyplace else that I know, that anybody has actually gone out into the work area and seen if they could form a coalition with the steel workers and others. And so he was known all over the country for this. Another thing that I'm not sure this is significant, but of Youngstown, but I think it's significant of the type of person that our priests and pastors and bishop have been, is that he was elected head of the National Council of Catholic Bishops, which was unheard of. It's usually been a cardinal or an archbishop. And so I'm sure this will come out and be written up in some way, because that was, it was a real honor. But I think just his interest in education, his interest in the social services of people, his interest in particularly in the people that lost their jobs through the decline of the steel industry in this area, all those things were recognized. Now, I think there are a lot of other good things that happened in the Youngstown area. I don't know if you have any particular questions.
Could you tell me what this? Well, the good things, I would imagine, kept the Youngstown Diocese very strong and mm-hmm. able to grow.
Mm-hmm.
What examples can you give me?
Well, I think the development of the parishes, I think they kept pace with the people as they moved around. They tried to provide for them. I think the while many of the schools had to collapse or close or shrink, there's always been a good strong base of Catholic education and throughout the diocese. And that's very difficult to maintain because the cost of it. I think another major thing, I don't know if I have all the figures, but with the bishops' help of taking care of the records can show of the poor in the 19. I just looked through some of the material that had been gathered by someone else, but for example, in 1976, the Catholic Charities campaign was 421,000 plus was collected. And we are now up to probably 1.9 million. And all of that money goes, you know, so that people, you can see, well, if you don't have somebody behind you, and that means that every parish donates so that people that are less fortunate will have something. And that money goes not to Catholics, but to people of any race, creed, or color that have needs, that come into our social agencies and we're able in some way to help them. So that's, you know, that in just that short span of time, it also demonstrates the economy and that those people were not able to take care of themselves. So in 1976, they collected 421,000, and it's up to 1 million. In 1991, it was 1.9 million. And now that includes for social services, for family life and ministry, for Bishop Malone, and I think he has given that idea throughout the diocese, Catholic social teaching, and part of that is social action. He's been recognized, I think your documents will show that, like he was just recognized for his work with the Jewish community. He's been recognized with all different kinds of things. and so that it's not ever just confined. Even his work with the steelworkers, he wasn't looking at it, well, we will only take care of people that are from our own particular faith, but we will take care of anyone that has need. So I think he was able to rally the people around him, which is good. And another thing that happened as far as activity, it was the tremendous growth in the last 20 years, and this would be following Vatican II. I don't have some documentation, but it's available, of the activities of the lay people, that's people in the parishes. Primarily, the only thing that was, you know, when I was growing up, they would have a Parent Teachers Association, and they had a Holy Name Society, but they had very little else. Now, any parish, even a very small parish, and that's at the because of the involvement of the lay people and the wonderful leadership that they've had. You can go to a small parish and they'll have as many as 20 organizations that will take care of a variety of needs. And you have the liturgy committee, and these are made up of people that are very interested in how services are going to be conducted. And you have within the parish different ones that have like a bereavement committee, people that have suffered a loss. And the people come together and are supportive. Well, if you don't have leadership that supports that, and I think Bishop Malone and Bishop Francette have been able to let the priests take the leader, you know, and work with the people. And while it's, I think it's a lot more work for the priests, because even if they don't do anything else but go to a either a committee or commission, the pastor, and say hello to this group of lay people, when you have 20 or 30 meeting, you know, over a month's time, that's very time consuming. And so there's been a dramatic change, I think, that and certainly, I recognize the lack of sufficient number of priests, but I think the priests that we do have, especially here in this area of Youngstown, are very hard workers. And I think just to, you know, that would be just one little way to demonstrate that if you have 20 organizations within a parish, and each one of them says, well, at least the pastor could come over and say hello or sit in our meeting, and you think of that over a span of time, plus his own responsibilities. So those, to me, are growth factors, whether they, you know. I don't know if you had any other questions.
Well, instead of growth, there's always something that can hinder an organization. What has in the past, besides economics, do you believe?
Well, I think the economics has had a tremendous effect on the composition of the different cities within the diocese, the towns and all. There's been violence has been I think that hinders the growth because people are fearful, and the difficulty, part of that, I really feel part of the violence is due to the lack of opportunity of jobs and within a family, if there's no work, and there's, you know, and child abuse is often a result of the lack of a person having a job. And there have been the family culture is different. The people at one time there was the extended family, and if the mother had to, for because of economic reasons, go out to work, there was a grandmother in the home or something. And the culture of our times, there isn't usually anyone to take care of children, so a big change. We've always had in church a real, you know, we started out with having orphanages or child care. Many of our service agencies, that's the reason they started, was for foster care. Well, that has then they wanted them to, instead of being in orphan asylums, they wanted them to be in a home situation, which is very good. But there are so many homes now that there's single parent. And that's why I think the growth in just the people donating more to the Catholic Charities over the years is because those are the kind of needs that we're servicing. And was unheard of, even, you know, I don't ever remember even that I was, that during the Depression you heard of things like soup lines, but that was immediately, you know, when I was growing up, you didn't have any such things as a soup line. Well, now you have places throughout the area that have to have it. And part of that is the economy, but part of it is what I think people just have lost a sense of hope. And that's why I think it's so important when you have your people, your Catholic people, know that their leadership gives them a sense of hope, even in the worst of times. And they demonstrate by the things that they've done. They continually try to, even if there's a minimal of education, they do want the children to be educated. And they work very well with the public school system in trying to, they feel education is so important. They work very well with the health facilities. And I think there's been, I'm sure I'll think of something later that I could think of. I didn't think of it, you know, now, but what I was trying to think of was what are some of the kinds of things that have happened over the years. And,
so the diocese does not appear to be having a lack of donations?
Oh, yes, it has a lack of donations, but I think you have to look at it in perspective. When you think of the numbers of people that are without jobs, and still in the parishes they have been willing to support others that are worse off than they. And I'm sure they're called on for many things, but that's a tremendous thing. If we're able to get close to $2 million just in donations from a 6-county area, and then all of that goes out immediately. Mm-hmm. That's very good. It's tremendous. You can't always meet that. It'll probably be, but our expenses are, increasing. And but all the money that we get for to help the poor come from the people in our own parishes. I mean, it's rare. Now, the agencies also get help from United Way, but I was looking at some of the other the documentation from some other areas, and they don't begin to get that from the parishes. And so now that, to me, the parish is not the bishop, it's not the priest, it's a combination of the people that are willing to sacrifice themselves. Mm-hmm. For and that's a real tribute. And I think a lot of it is because of the mixture we have of people. There's not one ethnic group, and there's a lot of different ethnic groups have come in even in the last mm-hmm. 15 years. The growth, I remember the Hispanics started to, they came originally from Puerto Rico, and from we got a lot from Mexico, both here in the Youngstown area, and in they went from here around the different cities, and they followed the steel mills. But there was a tremendous growth. Well, we may not have everything that they were looking for even after the steel mills closed, but they saw it as so much better than what they have any place they've come from. And they were welcomed, and I think that that has it's a credit not to one, but the feelings that have been generated throughout the years about welcoming other people. Some places they feel you've come to take our jobs, the few jobs that we have, and we don't want you. And so I don't think as a total diocese that this has been as prevalent. We also have some migrant workers up in the Ashtabula area, which is part of the diocese. And along the lake there's some migrant workers, and some have chosen to stay, and there's been some help now trying to get them settled. And another thing, trying to get in, there's a need for better housing in the area. So all of those things tie together and have a system to try to help them to get low-cost housing.
Mm. Now, as far as I'm going to go back to really right before the Youngstown Diocese became separate from the Cleveland Diocese, this area was predominantly controlled, and I don't know, composed of Protestants due to the steel mills ownership and other business tycoons, if you could say. What do you see that there, how was there such a change around that Youngstown is very strong in the Catholic faith, and you don't see the Protestants like you did, and you have the Catholics now, like the DiBarlos, powerful people who are able to, really help the diocese, help the Catholic faith in this area. What do you think happened?
Well, I think part of it was the recognition that these people have a rightful place in society. And while they were a lot of the immigrants when they first came, this would be true of almost any place when they first came, maybe the ones that you're talking about, the particular non-Catholics, if I could put them that way, they were well established, and so having been here prior to the newcomers and the immigrants, if you would, they were the ones that set up the jobs, and they were the ones that ran the steel mills and all. And I think that I wouldn't take a negative attitude about them. I think that people that provide work for others, they're to be commended, because they had funds and the people were able to work and have them have more money because they were able to generate. But, you know, they didn't sit back. They did employ a lot of immigrants. And once the immigrants got education, and that's why I think that the Catholics, once they became an educated group, see, when they came, many of them had a language problem. And the churches were all very, that was the thing they pushed, you know, to learn English and to become well educated. And it's people like the DiBarlos and the Caferos, they came, their people that way back came from, and they probably didn't speak English, but once they came and understood, and because they have a lot of abilities, and it was recognized, and I think it was the credit of the church that recognized that, and so that's where they pushed. And sometimes maybe some people feel today we lost our heritage because we only English was spoken, and they insisted on English in many of the schools, but it was for that reason. And I don't think that like today they want the child to learn both languages, not lose what he has if he's Hispanic or whatever nationality he is, but in order for in the early days for the immigrant to get along, because if you think of the steel mills, if there was a white foreman that only understood English, he didn't want to bother with somebody unless he could understand what he was trying to tell him. And but I think it's the leaders that we've had in a variety of ways that have encouraged anyone that would be willing to work for the good of others and to develop their own skills first and then to be of help. And I don't know if that's what the reference that you had or if that's helpful, but I think education is a big part of that.
Part of it.
Yeah.
So all I can imply from what you said is education. Becoming Americanized, really.
Yeah.
may be the fact if you need a population the size that we had,
yes.
first of all, to expand like
yeah.
the diocese needed to,
mm-hmm.
and to become so strong and become a dominant
yeah.
force in this area. Do you think you'd still have that if the steel systems had not closed?
I think that the ethnic groups, as they became acclimated to this area, they themselves would maybe have taken over some of the steel mills. It was just there were many, many factors why that could not have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think they took over in other ways. But you got to start with having good leadership. You have to start with pushing education, recognizing that a good social service system. And I credit the church. And maybe some of the others didn't. I don't fault any of the other particular faiths. They didn't do it. I'm only saying what I know what was done in the Catholic
mm-hmm.
entities. And then they'd encourage the faithful people to be of help to each other. And that's how a lot of these different committees developed throughout the in the parishes. You have, it isn't a case of just coming to church on Sunday and going off and not, have services only once and then you forget
right.
about it, but, during the course of time. And, I think it's been a... It's sad that some things have not continued to grow, but there's so many factors that make that, and sometimes these things are come in cycles. We don't know. I mean, it's a global economy we're dealing with today, why things are down. But I think we have a lot going for us in the... the Catholic Church as an entity.
Mm-hmm.
Are you Catholic or are you not?
And Methodist.
Yeah, well, that's good.
I'm both.
We understand it then,
Yeah. My mom and dad. What do you believe has been the biggest change besides walking together in the diocese?
Well, I haven't given that much thought. What's mm-hmm. been a change, you mean, as far as a
positive
or negative?
I mean, to me, I think that's a very significant change, the Walking Together program.
It's significant because it's unique. Now, there are other places that have something similar, but what I would say is even the title, no priest stood up and said, well, tomorrow we're going to close this church and you're going to have to go to another church. It was... well thought out, well planned. The people were very much involved. They had an opportunity to come together and talk about what. Well, in this way, that it didn't come as a dictum from on high, and it was not a total shock, because the people were given the tools to examine what their situation was. By having meetings and saying no, and there was a series of questions they asked. And they also had plenty of time to really reflect on what this means. For example, if there was two or three churches that started because in the immigrant mentality, each little group that came developed and they had their own church. And as these people moved away from their center, and they still would come back only for Sunday services, just letting the people sit down and say, are we in a situation where this is good sense, that we can continue to say the church is a building, or is the church a made up of people, and where the building is located. Now, everybody loves their church that they've had a part in building up. So I think the way Walking Together was handled, knowing what went on in Detroit, in Chicago, and even in Pittsburgh, not to be, saying that they didn't do it the right way, but it didn't come across to people that I've heard talk about it, that they were taken by surprise. They felt they didn't have an opportunity to tell their side of it. They didn't call them together in the same way. Now, maybe the people that I happened to hear that from didn't go when they had a meeting, but this is unique, the way they developed this walking together. And the documentation can be, you know, looked at, how that was handled. But when you have, I can't remember how many thousand people came together over the total diocese in a two-year period, so they all at least heard, you know, we got to sit down now and figure out how we're going to manage. So that while that might be a significant or a, I wouldn't look at it as radical, because when you're part of something, it might be, and I've had an opportunity to say, well, I think it ought to be done this way, or I think it ought to be done that way. Then you begin to reflect on it and you say, well, let's work together on this. So we're walking together. To me, it mm-hmm. is one of the. I remember hearing, well, we've got to, I went to some of the meetings, we've got to keep this church because it's the only one that, of our particular nationality in the whole city. Well, if it's the church that's that way, you know, or is it the people coming and wanting to come together? You know, right. If you have less than a couple hundred families, well, it's very difficult. It's not saying that it's easy, because it's, you know, change. And, I think some of the big differences has been the lack of employment. You know, at one time, when I first came to Youngstown, you know, the hospital jobs were considered, they'll take anything, you know, but that, because they looked at that, well, that's service, and I don't want to be, you know, I want to go out where there's big money. And now the hospital and the hospitals and the university are the, you know, the biggest employers. And that's a big change. Mm-hmm. But, you see, that's where the stick-to-itiveness comes. If we can keep a good educational system and you have a good health system, and you can service people, the people will rise up and it will not deteriorate. And that, I think the power is in the people coming together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't mention much about yourself as far as what was your first assignment in the diocese?
In the diocese, my first mm-hmm. assignment was St. Elizabeth. It was my...
Oh.
I was at St. Elizabeth for many years. No, I was not. I worked in an office before I entered the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose because of that, I was asked. We didn't ask at that time, you know. And I came, I didn't know when I came to our sisters. I knew them as in school, in teaching. Mm-hmm. And I didn't give it a whole lot of thought. I was more interested in really becoming a sister and just being dedicated. I didn't, I presumed I would be in either teaching, and I also knew we had a child care center in Cleveland, and I thought perhaps, because I was very interested in children,
mm-hmm.
that I'd be one. But I never thought of being in the hospital.
Never.
And then
is that where you stayed?
And then I stayed there, and I just went up the ranks. And
oh. Do you have a bachelor's in teaching at all?
No.
No.
My undergraduate work is in, was called a B.S. in commerce. I have a St. Louis University. I went 2 years to Youngstown State on a part-time mm-hmm. basis, took accounting. Most of my accounting is from there. And so then I got a bachelor's in from St. Louis University, and then I went on for a master's in hospital administration, and so I had a residency in New York,
mm-hmm.
in St. Vincent's Hospital in New York, and I've been very active in all kinds of health care.
I'm mm-hmm. from St. Louis.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you know, yeah. St. Louis University then.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I grew up in Florissant.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice section of
yes.
Well, there's tremendous growth in St.
Yes.
Louis.
I recently went back this summer. I couldn't believe
mm-hmm.
it. I wanted to go back and see
yeah.
my childhood.
Yeah. Well, Florissant is a very nice suburban
mm-hmm.
area. That,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's nice. Now, so you're really administrative. That's probably why you know so much.
No, I'm just interested. I just been around a while. No.
Oh, administrative side. So what? So you, if you after Vatican II, you were able to choose.
Well,
assignment.
Yeah, I suppose that was true. But as you, I started out working in the office, in the mini office, and then at that time we went into a building program, and I worked with the administrator, who was the administrator at that time, in the building program when we built the West Building. We had just North and South buildings. And then I was the assistant in for a couple years. And then we went into, when I became the administrator, we went into a couple other building programs. And so, but I was never like in the same kind of a job. While I was at the same institution, my job was different all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just happened to like people. I loved our employees. And we had... And then I became interested in at the state in the Catholic Conference of Ohio, and so there's a lot of activity there, and then also at the national level, mm-hmm. the state. And so.
So when did you come to Catholic Charities?
I came in July '90.
Okay. Mm-hmm. From St. Elizabeth's.
No, I was in leadership in our community.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for 8 years. Oh. I was elected in '81, and then I served. And then I went to Notre Dame University after that for a year sabbatical. And I worked in, took a course there. I just got very interested in, that's how I became interested in social services. I worked in, as part of my sabbatical in some shelters there.
Mm-hmm.
Got interested in, I've always admired people that took care of those in need.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
so what is your job now? What do you do?
I'm considered the vicar for social concerns, and that's more or less to be a presence. I don't pretend to, you know, have any real high-powered job. It's a and but that's it would be like a department head,
mm-hmm.
you know, of particular our social concerns. We handle the all the different Catholic agencies. They're separately incorporated, but we coordinate them. We have a man that's full-time in that. We have social action, which deals with the social teachings of the church, and he also has pro-life, women's commission, the minorities commission, you just name it. And he's been very active in a lot of things. And then we have this is the office where our appeal is done.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of our activity is trying to encourage parishioners to donate and try to explain to them what the money's used for. It's published annually, what we use it for. And then we also have a commission that's made up of the three Catholic hospitals, the three Catholic nursing homes, and the seven social service agencies in our diocese. And we come together and try to see the health care of the poor, how if the agency knows that somebody needs some kind of care. And so we try to work together. So it's the three different entities. And so it's a variety of things. And, we have a very active, it's an advisory board, but it's made up of people from all throughout the diocese.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 31 people on that board. And they're the ones that help us to respond to the appeal. They also find out how the money's used, and so we can demonstrate,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's being done. And
so you're from Cleveland?
I'm originally from Cleveland, yes.
I'm surprised you didn't stay with the Cleveland Diocese.
I was. I thought I was staying with it, because when I entered, it was the Cleveland Diocese.
Right. And you had they told you you're coming to Youngstown? Is that what
no,
happened?
No, where I came to, when I entered the convent. See, our mother house is in Villamarie, Pennsylvania, which
right.
is right off of 422 on.
Mm-hmm.
And that, we started out as a Cleveland mm-hmm. religious group, diocesan,
right.
a Cleveland diocese, and we didn't become papal until the mid-40s. But when I entered, I thought I was entering a community that was very active, in all of Northeast Ohio, which was true. And so I was interested at one time in looking into being a the different missionary orders, but you know, I chose this because I knew them. And so it, you know, other you know, just in the history, others, you know, as the there was the changes. Cleveland had one time also had Toledo, and it also had all of Youngstown. And I don't know whether Steubenville, I think that came off of the Columbus Diocese. Mm-hmm. So when Youngstown Diocese was formed, we were just here. Our mother house actually is located in the Pittsburgh Diocese, but we never looked at ourselves as being Pittsburgh because we came out of the Cleveland experience, and once we became papal, that meant we could work in any diocese where we mm-hmm. had a relationship with the people of that area.
So if I had to ask you two things, if I could say at its worst and at its best, could you describe working in the diocese?
Well, at its best, I've enjoyed, you know, being at the hospital. I felt very much a part of the diocese because we were, you know, that was the, it was because of the diocese that we were able to work and expand. And I think I never looked at it as worse.
No.
No, you know, I don't know what you'd mean when you say at its worst working in the diocese.
Has there been any negative moments for you?
Oh,
any
yeah.
Regrets?
Oh, sure.
Yes?
I would think, yeah. There would be negative moments in anything. Getting dark too early at night is negative for me. But, no, I can't say that there's been any traumatic, you know, types of things.
When I ask this question, I always assume that one of the sisters, especially a sister, would tell me, maybe at the best would be after 1963 due to Vatican II. So many of the changes,
yeah.
If I said at its worst, not saying it was so bad, but maybe life before Vatican II.
Well,
I never
you have to remember I grew up in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I was surprised that, you know, you never looked at it. If you want something, and I wanted to be a sister, and so if there were any things that would be considered by others as bad, you know, I thought, well, that's just part of the game,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't look at it, and mm-hmm. I just, you know, I wouldn't want to go back to some of the restrictions that we had. But
mm-hmm.
I didn't look at it at the time. For instance, we had restrictions like if you visited your home, you had to be back at the convent at a very time. And that was a real difficulty for the people that had to bring you because we didn't have cars, so we didn't drive, so you'd always have to. But if you came from the kind of family that I had, they understood that, and so they just made sure they were the ones that were pushing you out the door to get there on time, you
mm-hmm.
know. Now, I suppose you could look at it, well, it shouldn't have been, but...
But you don't think of that?
Oh, no.
No,
you grow up in it. So I'm sure you did things when you were a child that, you know, when you look back now, you'd say a
mm-hmm.
child today wouldn't put up with that, you know.
Also, I would think at its best, to me, it would, from these interviews, I would assume it would be the opportunities that the sisters have been given now for administrative
yeah.
work.
Well, see, I had that
things.
Before...
you
Vatican
did.
Too.
You did.
And so some sisters would, and that would be, although we always had sisters that were principals
mm-hmm.
of schools, which would be a very, I think I would look at it more as the church recognizing the signs of the times when Vatican II came along that, that's sort of a trite word nowadays, signs of the time, but, you know, I don't want to use it in that sense, but things had changed, you know. I belong to what they call an apostolic community, so we were always active. Now, we didn't drive cars, we didn't do a lot of that kind of thing, because it just wasn't, but there were always some sisters did that, otherwise you couldn't get around. But once they saw that things were changing, and, I think the having English in the mass and things like that were significant changes for me. I really appreciated that. Well, I liked the Latin, mm-hmm. but having that kind of thing, it made it that you really understood and you felt a part of it.
Right.
But I can't honestly say that that I felt abused in any way. And if they did, they left. No, but we didn't have a real difficult, you know, we were not considered a community that had unusual customs. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there may have been, and I've heard of some, and the restriction on time, the restriction on being going home, but you know, when you're young, you're almost glad to have something because you have so little that you can offer, you know. And so if it's approached that way, that this was really something real special, you do. You know, you have couples that get married and have to go to a different area, and if they mm-hmm. want to get married bad enough, they will, you know, they will do that. If they want to stay single, then they, so they got the choice. That's the way I look at it, so, you know, I wouldn't say that everything's rosy, but I don't know of any, I think I just thank God for my health and the ability to keep going.
What do you think about is there a mandatory retirement age of 70?
No.
For the mm-hmm. sisters?
No.
There's not?
No. If you're healthy and you're able and mm-hmm.
Can you stay in this job?
Not necessarily. No. You stay in it. You know, they usually don't have the sisters teaching or do something like this. Mm-hmm. This job might be, it's a different kind of a thing because I'm not. But I wouldn't advise somebody after they're, say, in a classroom. I think, I think your ability to react with children. But administrative type work, you know, you're... Administration is not time-bound or mm-hmm. age-bound. I wouldn't want to be in it if I felt, or if anybody would say, well, you're making it difficult for someone else. I think that would be bad. It would be better if somebody would. But when a teacher, for example, in a college situation, they have a researcher or someone like mm-hmm. that. A surgeon, for example, he shouldn't be operating when he's older, but you take a medical man. I know some excellent men that well into their 70s, and they were medical. And why waste all that knowledge?
That's
why not serve? You know?
I only bring this up because I spoke with Monsignor Latour.
Oh, yeah.
And he's very happy now with what he's doing at the hospital, but he was very upset, very adamant about Bishop Malone making him retire at 70. When he felt that
he could have stayed on,
And plus, you know, it does seem funny with this Walking Together program. Why make somebody that's able to go on retire?
Yeah. Well, that would be, and I think he's forthright and would say that. And knowing though the responsibilities that some have, and it could have been looked at. I don't know what the particular motive was there. That most people would welcome being released from some of that. So maybe today now, see, he retired a couple of years ago.
2 years, he said.
And maybe today now, you know, that's where changes come about. They would take another look at it and they'd say, well, if you're able, but, you know, how do you tell a person you're able and somebody else you're not able? That's what I think is the hard part.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. And a parish like that needs...
St. Edward's, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad he likes what he's doing, and he wouldn't have that opportunity if he had to continue as pastor. And he used to be over there even before he retired. He enjoyed that, but not to the extent he does it now. But I'd look at it that way, that how about, you know, his last, that he can give his time to something like that he enjoys.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are others that, you know, everybody looks at things a little bit different.
Right.
Yeah.
I just wonder. Is there anything else you think we need to discuss?
I don't know if that's any help to you.
You gave me tremendous sheer knowledge. You're so impressive, I think.
Oh, no.
With your knowledge.
Oh, no.
Maybe it's because you were at the administrative side,
mm-hmm.
and the others I've had to interview were basically teachers. I don't want to say basically.
Yeah.
They were teachers, mm-hmm. and they really couldn't mm-hmm. tell me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just told you what.